The Injured Senior Podcast is here to help. Like it or not, the senior and elderly population is vulnerable to negligence committed by medical professionals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, pharmaceutical and medical device companies, insurance companies, and everyday individuals and businesses. Your host, Steve Heisler, creator of the National Injured Senior Law Center, has been advocating for seniors' rights for over 30 years and is bringing you answers to your questions. This is the Injured Senior Podcast.
Hello, injured senior community, and hope all is well. This is Stephen Heisler, founder and CEO of the National Injured Senior Law Center, and you are dialed in to the latest edition of the Injured Senior Podcast. The Injured Senior Podcast, my friends, is a show dedicated to discussing medical and legal issues of vital importance to the injured senior and elderly population, as well as their families, loved ones, and caregivers. We are gratefully sponsored by the National Injured Senior Law Center, the advocates for seniors and the elderly who are injured by the negligence of others. Catastrophic injuries to seniors and the elderly can tear their world apart, ladies and gentlemen, and medical costs can deplete them of their life savings. If you believe you've been harmed by someone's negligence, say a hospital or a nursing home, go to www.injuredseniorhotline.com or call 877-228-4878 to get help. So today we have Dr. Sam Sugar back for a second time. He was in an episode several months ago, did a fantastic job, really is the expert on abusive guardianships and the elderly. And today we're going to talk about specifically how to prevent being placed under guardianship. Now, Dr. Sugar is a medical doctor and president of Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianships, or AAAPG, an organization committed to exposing the corruption of the guardianship systems in the United States. In 2014, after experiencing the atrocities of guardianship firsthand, Dr. Sugar created Americans Against Abusive Probate Guardianships. He has written a very important book, Guardianships and the Elderly, The Perfect Crime. Welcome back, Dr. Sugar. How are you doing this morning?
Thank you. I'm doing fine. I appreciate being here with you.
It's always good to have you on because you definitely have some vital information and advice for our listeners. And I want to thank you for agreeing to come back on the show because, as I said earlier, the first episode was fantastic as far as the information that you were able to give. So let's get right into it, Dr. Sugar. Why is preventing guardianships very important to our senior and elderly communities?
First of all, thanks for asking the question. Thanks for having me on. And I hope that in our little talk today, we can give some important tidbits and nuggets to your listening audience to help them avoid the ever-increasing threat of winding up in one of these guardianships ever during their lifetime. The reason why prevention of guardianship is so incredibly important is really related to the reality that getting out of a guardianship or terminating a guardianship is essentially impossible. Once these things start, they really cannot be stopped. The system is designed to make it very easy to fall into a guardianship, very easy to be caught up in this legal maze that is so opaque and so impossible to understand, but very, very hard, if not impossible, to ever get out. And that's why it's really important for us to have this discussion today, because there are some ways to reduce the likelihood, probably not to zero, but to reduce the likelihood that you or a loved one will ever be in this horrific mess called guardianship.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, Dr. Sugar. can the senior and elderly population rely on the state or federal governments to put restrictions on guardianships of the elderly, or what are your thoughts on that?
In order to answer that question, I've got to backtrack and take a slightly different perspective. And that Sure. is the reality that guardianship in the United States is really a state-based issue. In other words, every state in the union, all 50 states, have their own set of rules, regulations, statutes, and customs when it comes to the concept, which is originated from the English term parens patriae, which means the king has responsibility for all his subjects. This idea of guardianship came from England in the 16th century when they created courts that were courts of equity run by the king in order to deal with issues that courts of law had trouble with. And these ideas came over when the founding fathers created the country and in 1939 decided that they would put all these courts together in one little package, which we now are stuck with. But each state, according to the Constitution and all the fights that led to the Constitution, retained what's called states' rights, including complete dominion over matters of inheritance. And so each state has its own individual approach to who should be in guardianship, how they should be run, etc. And to your question, there are tremendous barriers for any aspect of the federal government to become involved in any matters of inheritance because of that states' rights perspective. Now, hopefully, there will come a time, and maybe that time is coming quickly, where aspects of the federal government can be engaged to now, in this day and age, take some leadership role in mitigating the damages that are done at the state level. And just recently, we have seen some movement in that respect where Congressman Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz have requested of the Judiciary Chairman in the House, Gerald Nadler, to immediately hold hearings. This was stimulated by the Free Britney movement and the Britney Spears conservatorship, which is the same as a guardianship in terms of language. And another request by Congressman Peter Stube from Florida to the Attorney General to hold similar hearings. But at this time, it's unlikely that the federal government, in any meaningful way at least, can play a role in minimizing the abuse that we have documented over the country for so many years. It's a state-based problem.
So it's promising. We have, as you said, Congress having some hearings. We are in March of 2021. But it's not anything to get too excited about.
There have been numerous ADA lawsuits, 1983 type civil rights lawsuits, none of which have really gotten anywhere. But we're always hopeful that the federal government will wake up to the abuses that we've been seeing so frequently and so commonly and so disturbingly from all around the country. It really has gotten to the point where this is no longer the secret that it used to be, and the abuses that are coming from the court insiders, namely the judges, lawyers, guardians, and all of their downstream enablers, are becoming public. You can see them on websites, on Facebook, on Twitter. You can see them in the Free Britney movement and all of the others that are so easily available. It's just astounding with all of these issues and complaints that not more action has taken place either legislatively on the state level or federal level or in the news media, to be perfectly honest. It has been a very big struggle to get the coverage needed to create a groundswell of public opinion to move the needle on this very serious topic, especially for listeners who are elderly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, like you said, the tide will start turning. So, Dr. Sugar, what, in your opinion, is the best way for a senior or elderly to avoid being placed under guardianship in the first place?
It's a complicated question and a complicated answer, but I'll do my best. Preventing a guardianship is very, very difficult because guardianships typically, especially the abusive kind, typically result from family dysfunction, meaning that there is a dispute among potential heirs within a family about what to do with mother or father or grandmother or aunt or whatever relative. Oftentimes these disputes result from good intentions, and occasionally they come about by nefarious intentions. We've seen cases where a distant niece or nephew suddenly pops up into the life of a wealthy individual and undertakes to put them in guardianship, and their motivation would appear to be strictly what the lawyers would call pecuniary, meaning they're after their money. Other times there are honest disputes between, for example, siblings about whether mom or dad needs to be in a nursing home or whether they need to be cared for at home. There are disputes about money, of course. Money is what guardianship tends to be all about, generally speaking. And those disputes, when they lead to the retaining of an attorney who then goes to the court, can lead to a very tragic guardianship. So the first piece of advice for anybody who's really serious about never winding up in this awful position of having their rights stripped away by a court needs to get their house in order on a personal level. They need to take the action proactively to gather their family members and resolve their family disputes before they escalate into a horrible guardianship situation. Whatever it costs, whatever it takes, it's much better than any possible alternative, including guardianship. If you can get your family on the same page, you've reduced the likelihood very much of ever winding up in a guardianship.
Thank you for that, Dr. Sugar. This is Steve Heisler, and we are talking to Dr. Sam Sugar about how to prevent guardianships, and you are listening to the Injured Senior podcast. You write in your book, Dr. Sugar, never ask a lawyer to solve family disputes. Why is that?
Recognizing that I'm talking to a lawyer and recognizing that I have a son and a brother who are prominent attorneys, my answer will be completely honest. Lawyers, as good as many lawyers are, the lawyers that work in litigation in probate court are motivated by their own pecuniary interests far more than their interests in the welfare of an individual whom they don't even know. And that's a sad commentary, but it seems to be borne out over time. If you ask a lawyer to work for you, in addition to paying an hourly rate, you have to understand that what lawyers do is litigate. They go to court and they start fights with the lawyers on the other side. That's called litigation. That litigation is very expensive. And from our perspective, after seeing thousands of cases of guardianship that wind up in these protracted litigations that cost enormous amounts of money, if one were to take the step I mentioned earlier of fixing their family dysfunction, all of that might be avoidable, perhaps, but it's certainly a lot cheaper, a lot more satisfying and a lot more conciliatory to the family, which is typically destroyed during this litigation, than the alternative. So if your interest is to maintain your family as a cohesive unit, to not have them at each other's throat over your money, and to be content with the fact that your own family isn't going to go after you when you're vulnerable, getting your things in order with your family is far more beneficial and far more effective than any consultation with any professional attorney, especially probate litigators.
Right. Well, I'm not a probate litigator, but I am a litigator. But no offense taken, Dr. Sugar, because I would agree with you. Yeah, I definitely would agree with you.
To be fair, lawyers do have an important role to play in preventing guardianships. But that role is not litigation. That role is estate planning. And I'm quite sure that the vast majority of your listening audience has spent significant money to create an estate plan, which includes what we refer to as advance directives. Advance directives typically include a durable power of attorney, which allows you to state in writing whom you want to handle your money affairs when you can't, and a healthcare power of attorney, indicating whom you would like to make medical decisions for you when you can no longer make your own. Those documents, usually including a will, are critically important when trying to figure out what life is going to be like when you can't take care of yourself. They are the best way to at least indicate your wishes. Having said that, though, those advance directives are worthwhile, maybe not worth the incredible amount of money being charged to create them, but they're a good measure, unless they are challenged in probate court. Because the tendencies we have seen with judges in probate, especially in hotspot areas like Michigan, Florida, New York, California, New Mexico, Texas, and the like, is that especially if the advance directives aren't up to date, and especially if they aren't what we refer to as bulletproof, and we'll get to that in a minute, judges have a tendency to want to create guardianships by saying, for one reason or another, that these advance directives aren't valid anymore, they're too old, or that maybe they were written when the person already was demented, so they aren't valid. That is a huge, huge problem, and it opens the door to massive abuse in abusive guardianships. So making your advance directives bulletproof includes the idea of stating with great clarity that you forbid, and I'm going to use the word forbid, the appointment of a professional guardian over you or your estate for any reason whatsoever. That is not typically included in advance directives, but it's my recommendation to include it in every advance directive, because the threat of a guardianship from a family member, remember we discussed last time there are different types of guardianship,
right?
The two biggest ones being family, a member being your guardian. Second one being in a public guardianship if you really are very destitute. Or the third and the most dangerous is the professional guardianship, which we find to be extremely problematic. So preventing the appointment of a professional guardian over your estate or yourself is a very important move in your advance directives.
Okay. And if our listeners go to an estate attorney and they mention that they want something in the directive that says that under no situation does that person want to be placed under a professional guardianship, are the estate attorneys most likely going to know that and be able to, you know, include that in the directive?
Well, whether they do or not, it isn't that complicated. It's just a short paragraph. And basically, it says precisely what I said before. I specifically prohibit, under any and all circumstances, the appointment of a professional guardian over my person or estate. That's the whole sentence.
Great, great. Thank you for that, Dr. Sugar. I think that's well worth listening to the episode just by itself. This is Steve Heisler, and I am talking with Dr. Sam Sugar about how to prevent a guardianship from occurring to a senior or elderly. You're listening to the Injured Senior Podcast. Dr. Sugar, you also mention in your book that if you are a senior or elderly, to avoid making visits to banks, brokerages, or credit unions. My question is, obviously, you know, there's a method to the madness, and I guess, you know, it's to avoid, someone from one of those institutions from maybe thinking, oh, this person is not all about their wits, and they're making bad money decisions, so I'm going to call Adult Protective Services. Is that accurate?
Sure. It is, and let me demonstrate by example. I was involved a year or two ago with an attorney, actually, who was representing an elderly person who was being visited by her grandson, who was going to college. The elderly woman took her grandson to her local bank, where she wrote papers, a withdrawal slip, to give a check from the bank to her grandson to help cover his college tuition. The amount is really not relevant, but it happened to be $10,000, which, if you have any kids in college, you realize is just a drop in the bucket to pay college tuition these days. One of the officers in the bank decided it was her responsibility under FINRA, the new rules from the FINRA administration, which oversees financial institutions, that she thought something hinky was going on and notified the police, notified Adult Protective Services, which resulted in a near arrest of both the grandmother and the grandson. And of course, there was nothing hinky going on. But I use this example to demonstrate that the financial professionals who you used to think were your friends, because after all, you know, they give you a lollipop or something when you deposit money or a dog treat, these people have now been essentially deputized to be the eyes and ears of law enforcement when, for whatever reason they can imagine, imaginary or not, they believe that you're being taken advantage of. You can just imagine the door that that opens up for abuse and exploitation. Now, this is not to say that abuse and exploitation don't take place and that there are some hinky things going on. There are. But that's the world we live in. And the real threat behind all of these interventions is that you may wind up in a guardianship because you wanted to be generous to your grandson.
Well, then what do you do? I mean, to just write the check? In other words, you know, if you want to give money to your, you know, to a family member or a grandchild, yeah, you can. I guess the idea is to have a checking account so you can write a check or.
That's right. The idea is to be able to transfer money easily, and nowadays it's very simple, even if you're not very technical or sophisticated. Direct wire transfers. Cash works very well, although everybody understands the problem with cash these days. But just writing a check, I can't imagine people not having checking accounts in this day and age.
Yeah.
But the important message is not how you want to give money, but to be aware that the very act of giving money can put you yourself at risk of something really unpleasant and horrifying.
Yeah.
So the idea is to be aware and to know your banker and to know your financial institutions. But this can come from a bank. It can come from a broker. It can come from almost any place. Because nowadays, Adult Protective Services is being used as the initial contact for almost anything that appears to be out of order with an elderly person. And by the way, it's not just elderly people. It's everybody who might be vulnerable.
Right.
And
right.
Their ultimate cudgel, if they press, is to put you in a guardianship. And that's a horrible thing.
Yeah. You also mentioned that our listeners should put their homes in joint tenancy or all their assets in joint tenancy. Can you briefly explain why?
Yeah, the idea of joint tenancy is it's an imperfect idea because joint tenancy doesn't mean that either signatory on the account actually also owns the assets. There have been court cases and decisions that reject that notion. However, it is harder for a court, for a judge in probate, to take over an account that has joint tenancy. It's much easier for the court to take control over an account with only one signatory. It can be done with joint signatories, but it is harder. And it is just one other of the steps that are necessary, unfortunately, in this environment to try and reduce the likelihood that your assets will be seized, even if it's not you that's being put in a guardianship. The power of the probate court is far greater than almost anyone realizes, not just to take away your civil rights, which is horrible, of course, and constitutionally invalid, in my opinion, but also to put you in the poorhouse as well. Because if your assets are all under one account, and let's say you're the wife of a gentleman who's declared incapacitated and the house is in his name, the checking account is his name. When the court seizes all of that stuff, what are you going to live on? How will you pay your bills?
Yeah.
It's not just the one person. It's the spouse. It's the children. It's the grandchildren. When the grandfather or grandmother has an account for which they're helping pay for their children's mortgage, or they're helping pay tuition, or helping with car payments. I mean, nowadays, especially in this pandemic, families are helping each other because there's no choice. But if that account disappears and goes under the complete control of the court or a guardian, what's going to happen to all the people that are being assisted by that individual and their money? It's a serious problem, which is another reason to avoid guardianships at any cost.
Yeah, thank you for that, Dr. Sugar. It's just so important to make sure that your assets are titled in joint tenancy, and that's something also that you can talk about with your estate planner. So, Dr. Sugar, you have a symposium coming up on April 11th of 2021, is that correct?
Yes, thank you so much for bringing that up. Yes, indeed, we are having a symposium on guardianship sponsored by our organization, Americans Against Abuse of Probate Guardianship. It's on April 11th and 12th. It's a two-day session where we're bringing in experts from academia, law enforcement, the victim community, politicians, hopefully. And we are going to have a thorough discussion about the problems associated with guardianship on the first session, which will be April 11th in the evening. And day two will be dedicated to progress and moving forward with solutions to deal with this issue. It will be a virtual event, and people can get details and tickets for the symposium as well as register for it at our website, www.aaapg.net. And the public is invited, particularly the naive public, that may not know enough about this to protect themselves or to deal with it should it happen to them or a loved one. It is going to be an important symposium, especially now that we're seeing some momentum from politicians to recognize the danger this poses to their constituents as well. So we're hopeful for an increasingly large audience. This is our fifth major symposium from AAAPG, and your listeners are more than welcome to join.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, and I am definitely going to be a part of that virtual audience. So we're really looking forward to it, Dr. Sugar. Listen, I want to thank you again for just a wealth of very important tips on the topic of preventing a guardianship. I really, really am very thankful for you giving us your time today, Dr. Sugar. Now, if somebody wants to maybe converse with you privately, could they send you an email if they have a potential guardianship situation that they're not sure about how to go about fighting it?
So the good news is, the answer is yes. What we've done at AAAPG is to create a national network of advocates. As I mentioned earlier, all of these issues are state-based. And so while I am intimately familiar with the Florida statutes, because that's where I live, I don't know much about the Oklahoma statutes or the Nebraska statutes. So what we've tried to do is to create a national network of advocates who are familiar with the issue in their own states. And when people do contact me, I will likely take their basic information and the issues about which they're contacting me and pass them on to a local advocate or expert in the area in question, who can then respond based on the information that they've learned over the years from me and other advocates, and try to respond in an intelligent way. As long as everyone understands we're not lawyers and we cannot give legal advice and we will not recommend attorneys, it's a very slippery slope to do any of those things. But we will be available to listen, which is probably the most important part, and to let people know that they're not alone, and to give advice based on the experience that each of our advocates has had.
That's great news. Yeah, that's really important. And again, you're not going to recommend an attorney, but you can, I guess, or you just can give them the names of a couple different attorneys that might have experience in this.
It all depends. In states like Florida and California and Michigan, where there's just such an enormous number of cases, and there are a few lawyers that have proven to be trustworthy and reliable, of course. But in states like Utah, for example, because there are so very, very few abusive guardianships, not none, mind you, not none, we have a couple, but we might not have the names or be familiar with any of those. The point is, what we're looking to do is give people the assistance that we can to navigate a very opaque system that is different in every, not only every state, but it's different in every judicial circuit in every state as well. Here in Florida, there are 67 counties with 19 circuits, and each one of them has its own peculiarities and characteristics, and it takes a real intimacy from that area and within that area to be able to give reasonable advice. So that's the reason we set up the network, and be happy to try to help anybody who really needs it.
That's coming full circle. That's even more of a reason not to get, you know, to do everything in your power to prevent a guardianship and not be in a situation where you have been placed under the guardianship, and then you really are gonna, you're gonna face some trouble. All right, Dr. Sugar. Well, it's as I said, it's great to have you. We will be talking to you soon, and you have yourself a great day.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure indeed.
Injured Senior and Aging Population Community, thanks for listening to today's episode. I want to thank again Dr. Sam Sugar for appearing on the show today with his great encyclopedia of information. If you love the Injured Senior podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on your favorite podcast platform. If you want to share your story about any type of guardianship or any other type of medical negligence that you'd like to talk about your experience, feel free to email me at steve@injuredseniorhotline.com or go to our website, www.injuredseniorpodcast.com, and you can leave a message by going to the website. It's been a great episode. It's great to have you here today. Until next time, I am so looking forward to next week's show. Stay safe, and I will talk to you soon. Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Injured Senior Podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate, subscribe, review, and share on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with us at InjuredSeniorPodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter. To find out more or to get help at any time, visit InjuredSeniorPodcast.com or call 855-622-6530. That's 855-622-6530.